Picture a classroom where students carry guns instead of textbooks, where funeral attendance outnumbers field trips, and where a teenager has seen more dead bodies than a mortician. This was room 203 at Wilson High School in Long Beach, California, a place where 150 students, labeled unteachable, would defy every expectation. Their teacher, Aaron Gruwell, walked into what resembled a bad rerun of Cops in 1994 and sparked a transformation that would ripple across the globe. These weren't just troubled teens. They were survivors of a war zone most Americans refused to acknowledge. Through diary entries that would eventually become a best-selling book, they documented their journey from gang members and abuse survivors to published authors and college students, proving that the most powerful weapon against intolerance isn't a gun, it's a pen. The students' diaries read like combat dispatches. One 14-year-old's mother makes the sign of the cross each morning, not from routine piety, but genuine fear her child won't return alive. Constantly chased by armed youths, this child buys a .22 caliber pistol for $25, with money meant for school supplies. Another recounts buying candy when their friend collapsed from gunshot wounds, then brings a gun to school the next day, the cold metal a reminder of all the lives this gun has claimed. Wilson High's quad was segregated into Beverly Hills for white students, Chinatown for Asians, Tijuana Town for Hispanics, and Daghetto for black students. One student attended only because their probation officer offered a choice, school or boot camp. Another, caught in a race-related brawl, noted sadly, "Because I'm Mexican and Mexicans were involved in this stupid race war, I figured no one would have listened anyway." Their diaries revealed undiagnosed dyslexia, sexual abuse, parents lost to drugs or prison, and relentless gang pressure. One student attended only because their probation officer offered a choice, school or boot camp. Another, caught in a race-related brawl, noted sadly, "Because I'm Mexican and Mexicans were involved in this stupid race war, I figured no one would have listened anyway." Their diaries revealed undiagnosed dyslexia, sexual abuse, parents lost to drugs or prison, and relentless gang pressure. Gruwell made literature a mirror for her students' lives. Teaching Romeo and Juliet, she compared the feuding Montagues and Capulets to local gangs. One student realized, "I couldn't even remember how our rivalry started. It's just tradition now." The meaningless feuds that killed Shakespeare's lovers suddenly felt uncomfortably familiar. In The Peanut Game, students described peanuts inside and out, a metaphor about human differences. One wrote, "I realized the absurdity that we don't judge peanuts by their shells, yet we kill over human skin color." When students showed little interest in King Arthur, Gruwell offered an incentive. Pass the test, attend Medieval Times restaurant. Everyone passed. The turning point came with Anne Frank's diary and Zlata Filipovic's diary from war-torn Sarajevo. Students who had rejected literature suddenly saw themselves in these young writers. One wrote, "Like Anne Frank, I knew what it felt like to be trapped, not by the Gestapo, but by gangs. When I walk outside, I'm constantly looking around, putting on a facade to fit in." Literature became a lifeline, connecting their pain to a larger human story. When Anne Frank's childhood friends Yopi DeWall and Lise Goossens visited Room 203, abstract history became achingly real. They shared memories of playing hopscotch with Anne in Amsterdam, describing her vivacious spirit and constant storytelling. Lise recounted the heartbreaking moment she risked her life throwing bread to Anne across the Bergen-Belsen fence, only to watch another prisoner steal it. Meeting 87-year-old Miep Gies, the woman who hid the Frank family and preserved Anne's diary, proved even more transformative. When a student called her a hero, Miep firmly rejected the title. "No, you, my friends, are the true heroes. Fighting discrimination and educating future generations was now their responsibility." The connection deepened when Zlata Filipovic, author of a diary about war-torn Sarajevo, arrived wearing Doc Martens and a backpack covered in band pins. Asked about her ethnic identity, Zlata simply replied, "I'm a human being." One student reflected, "I've always been taught to be proud of being Latina, more proud of a label than of being human." Now, if asked my race, like Zlata, I'll simply say, I'm a human being. After watching a video about the Freedom Riders, civil rights activists who challenged segregation on integrated buses, the class found their identity. One student connected with Jim Zwerg, a white Freedom Rider beaten nearly to death in Montgomery, realizing they too had made a choice by staying in Miss Gruel's diverse class rather than transferring out. They became Freedom Riders, fighting intolerance through writing as the original activists fought racism through action. Their diary entries evolved into an American diary, Voices from an Undeclared War, a cathartic process that allowed students to confront unspoken traumas. One student editing another's story about sexual abuse felt both exposed and relieved to discover someone shared their painful secret. At the Lincoln Memorial during their Washington, D.C. trip, standing hand in hand facing the city, one student had an epiphany. We were standing where Dr. Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. We, Freedom Riders, diverse students united together, are his dream come true. When their human chain stopped traffic on Pennsylvania Avenue, someone asked what they were doing. The answer was simple: changing the world. Recognition brought validation and new challenges. Doubleday, the publisher of Anne Frank's diary, offered a book deal. They won the Spirit of Anne Frank Award and appeared on Primetime Live. For students labeled below average and at risk, these achievements were profound. One reflected, 4 years ago, I would have laughed if someone said Miss G would last more than a month. We weren't supposed to make it. But look at us now. The badasses and at-risk kids are heading to higher education. Success brought complications. Some struggled to balance academics with speaking engagements. Drawing on their literary knowledge, one compared their situation to Animal Farm, noting their Freedom Rider farm had divided into hard-working boxers and lazy mollies. At the heart of their transformation was Gruel, not just an educator, but a surrogate parent who worked three jobs to fund field trips, bought supplies, and found shelter for homeless students. When one student gave themselves an F, she confronted them. Fuck you. That's what this is. She refused to let them fail, even if it meant showing up at their house daily. Her impact extended beyond academics, connecting students with treatment for alcoholism, counseling for abuse survivors, creating a safe space where they could be authentic. By 1998, all 150 original Freedom Riders had graduated high school, defying every prediction. One student, the first in their family to graduate, wrote, "While I'm bursting with excitement, my extended family doesn't support me. They expect me to fail like my cousins. Only my parents and the Freedom Riders have motivated me to exceed expectations." Gruel became a professor at California State University, Long Beach, training future teachers in Freedom Riders methods. The Freedom Riders Foundation now trains thousands of educators worldwide. The Freedom Riders proved that teenagers carrying guns can learn to carry stories instead, that survival instincts can transform into storytelling gifts. The most dangerous weapon isn't hidden in a waistband. It's a pen that refuses to accept the world as it is. As one student wrote, "They say all good things come to an end, but I'm learning they don't have to. Your story isn't finished until you stop writing it."